Our third and last speaker for the viticultural section is Gonzaga Santesteban. Gonzaga Santesteban is professor at the Public University of Navarra. He is specialist in so many topics that I cannot cite them all. Water relations in vines, isotopes, precision viticulture, pruning, and he's not only working on vines, but also on other fruit trees. He is head of the Department of Agriculture at his university, and he's working on cover crops. That's a topic from today. And with the big movement towards agroecology, cover crops is really a hot topic, because of course we all want to move away from herbicides, but also plowing in agroecology is not considered very favorably. So probably cover crops is a solution, but cover crops, you know, you can work it in different ways, having the whole area with cover crops or just between the rows, and there's so many spaces that you can use. So it's a very, very interesting topic of research. So Gonzaga,
thank you, please. I was trying to gain some time asking questions to the last speaker, so I have a little time for myself, but this is a very long topic. There was no way, because he's cut the question and answer section. No, I'm very pleased to be here. This is me. I was already introduced by Keith. And this work, the work I am presenting today, or the main work, was done all together with a colleague, with Javier Abad, who was a PhD student that was working with me, and now he's public consultancy enterprise in Spain, in Navarra. I will start talking about my first experiences with cover crops. They started here in a small village. This is the whole village, a big church, but small village. In Navarra, it's a dry area, and this is the climatic data of that. The precipitation maybe is too much here, like 275 millimeters a year. And this was my first cover crop. It's fantastic, because we were like in the middle of a very dry area, and this was a really, really good experience for me. This was sown in 2002, and was a really, really good experience. This is my second experience in a nearby village in Cascante. Similar rain, maybe a little bit more, very nice also, very nice place. And this is my second cover crop, was a total disaster. I killed some vines. I was younger, of course, like nearly 20 years younger, and it was scary because I was very convinced that cover crops are the future of viticulture in Navarra, in the region, but this was a total disaster. So I learned very early that the cover crops are a complex topic, that we have some idea that more or less we can see that they can be good in general terms for everywhere, like a reduction, decrease erosion, improvement of soil structure, biodiversity, improve the machinery traffic. So this is like, that is quite clear, but there are a lot of things that are not clear, because we can have, of course, changes in yield that can be for the good or for the bad, and the course, the vigor, the weed control, pests and diseases, there are a lot of things, competition for water that can be good or can be bad, competition for nutrients that can be for the good and for the bad. And the only clear thing that we know that cover crops are usually bad for is the risk of frost events. Okay, but that's the question. But as I learned when I was 25 or something like that, is that it's really complex question that we have many things to think about and to learn about. So we need to know if this is true or not, because sometimes there are some general ideas over there. If how much is this? And the question is where and why this is happening, and which is the direction of this. Okay, so when we discuss with colleagues on cover crops, we hear a lot of things, because everyone has an idea of if it's good, if you need to put one, or if you don't. There are some clear facts, but there are also a lot of urban legends on cover crops. Okay, so I was trying to investigate, because you know, researchers, we investigate, which was one of the most famous urban legends in France. That's why I was coming to France. And I found one nice urban legend that there was crocodile in Paris sewage system. So I made some friends with the crocodile because I wanted to learn about the French urban legends. And he told me, you should make a systematic review on this topic. If you have so many questions, you need to do a systematic review. So I will explain what we did, that what is a systematic review, and some things that we learned. A systematic review, as you may know, all of you, a review is that you try to read everything on a topic and you try to understand everything. To be systematic, you need to include, of course, a question, a search strategy that can be reproduced, so you need to do it in a very systematic way. You need to have some criteria to incorporate the information to your review or to exclude it, and some selection methods. In our case, what we did for this cover crop and viticulture systematic review, these were the database we used, the Scopus, the keywords we used, and the years we took like 20 years because everything was too much, but we were looking for cover crop or green cover, ground cover or tillage, and wine or vitis or vineyard or grapevine or grape in that 20-year period. Okay, so when we did that, if you do that, you did that in that day because it was at early 2020, I think, or 2029, we found like 584 papers that have been published with those keywords. So that's the first step, in its sense. Then, what you need to do is to exclude some of them. Okay, so we used those exclusion criteria that were on experiment, that were on table grapes, that apparently were on grape, but really they were not on grape for other crop. Some modeling approaches that were not experimentation. So we did that process. And then, that process, I'm sorry, to be systematic, needs to be performed independently by two people. Okay, so two persons separately, was necessary to analyze that, to read all the abstracts, and to decide if we included them or not. And after that, we had 272 papers to read. So we took the crocodile and we start the digestion of all that, those papers, and we got to two systematic reviews you can find in the N01 journal. The first is related to soil characteristics and biodiversity, and the second one is related to the agronomic implications mainly. Okay, so these are the two works I will be more or less talking about. If you go to those papers that you know they are for free, open for everywhere, and it's fantastic, and I'm in love with N01, so I have to be you will find a lot of tables. Okay, this is a table for nitrogen. This is for nitrogen. So here you find the location, the soil management strategy, the cover type, and the final soil nitrogen, mineral or total, for each treatment. So sometimes you have two cover crops, sometimes you have five different ways of managing the soil that include cover crops, herbicide, and some tillage differences. So you take this and you have a lot of information on nitrogen. You go, you follow with the same table, of course, because they are long tables, and you find more things, more information. And you go on, and of course, this is the first table in the first paper. So you have a lot of information that is, of course, we cannot explain here. So I went back to my friend, and he told me, wait. It's impossible, okay? As a colleague of mine said, you could simplify everything, but to a point, no more. Because if you do that, you are lost. So you are telling me, said the crocodile, in French, but I'm translating for you, okay? You took like 272 articles that are more than 2,500 pages, and you reduced them to 25 pages. You cannot simplify this more. It's impossible. So please tell people in the audience that they have to read the paper, because you cannot make a summary of a summary of a summary. It's impossible. Okay? So, I will tell some things, of course, but I go back to this. You have the QR code, you have everything. So, if you want to learn everything there, you have to go there, because the summary is useless, okay? This was my real problem when preparing this conference, because I was like stuck trying to make simpler what it can be done. So, please, you have here a lot of information that we didn't do, but a lot of scientists all around the world did. We just compiled that, and I think it's worth the effort of reading it. So, I will explain some facts, general facts. We have observed the general trends, but these are trends, these are average things. You need to go to the work, because in that work, it's not only what happened, but where happened, with variety, the climate it was, have a lot of information there. Okay? So we go to some soil facts that I will explain. Nitrogen. In general terms, as an average, if we take grasses as cover crops, we have a decrease that is around 25%, as an average, I will insist, in total nitrogen and in mineral nitrogen. Okay, this is the average value that can be a reference that you have, okay? If we go to legume cover crops that you know that they make some nitrogen fixation, we get an increase of about 30% in total nitrogen, but this is increases higher in the mineral nitrogen that they are fixing. They, as an average, they double the quantity of nitrogen. However, there are not a lot of research, but the method that are being applied by people can be interesting. Only a small fraction of the nitrogen that is fixed by the legumes goes to the vineyard in the short term. Maybe 10%. In that experiment, they saw that of the 125 kilograms of nitrogen that were fixed, only the 10% was going to the vines. Okay? So that's also an interesting thing. Soil organic carbon, you know, we speak about the carbon fixation and all the questions related to that. All the cover crops increase, of course, the carbon content of the soils. And here you have that spontaneous cover crops as a whole are the most efficient in these terms, and legumes are the less efficient ones at the global scale. Very important question, soil aggregates that are related to structure. Okay, if we want to have a good soil, we need to have a good soil structure. All the papers that have analyzed that, but they are not a lot, but like four or five, they observe an improvement in soil structure in 2-3 years' time. That is not a long period, considering that we are talking about soil health. Okay? And if we go, that is really related to this, to soil erosion, this is the amount of soil that is getting lost in the vineyards included in this review when we use herbicide. Per hectare and year, we are losing 12 tons of soil. Not bad. If we till, we have a similar value. Okay? So this is not a good strategy to keep the soil. If we use the cover crops, we are having a range of 1.1, 3.5 as an average, depending on the type of cover crop. So it's a big impact, the one we can have, okay, on soil erosion, and this is a question that we have to be concerned about. Okay, so the numbers are clear, and the results are also very clear. Some biodiversity facts. Microbial health of the soil is always improved. Three times earthworms observed when cover crops are used when compared to no use of cover crops. Some other things here, that there are not so many papers, I put the reference of the original authors, increase in bees, increase in different types of birds, increase on bats. So the urban legend that diversity is improved, true. Okay, everywhere is quite clean. If we go to pests and diseases, this is a very good place for the urban legends, okay? Because everyone has seen a field where they use the cover crop and something very good or very bad happened, because everyone has things to talk about. Okay, here we took some facts, and I'm summarizing some of the things. We never found a paper where the use of a cover crop increased the incidence of a disease. Never. Okay, and in the 67% of the cases, there was a decrease in the incidence. Of course, it was mainly related to vigor reduction. Okay, some examples of decrease, some examples of no change in the incidence of diseases, but we are having no more disease problem with cover crops, according to these around 20 studies that were focusing on plant diseases. Okay, if we go to pests, there were also around 20 papers dealing with that. There was no increase except for one of those 20 research pieces where a moth, light brown apple moth, was increased in the case of the cover crop, but in the remaining one, there was either no change or a decrease. Okay, so these are numbers. The main decrease was observed in cicadellids, and mainly as incident of some parasitoids that were interacting with the pests. Okay. In this regard, we have a lot to learn, because when we are working with a cover crop like this, we need to open the mind and to think how we have to proceed. Because when we are having a pest, we need to manage the fauna that is living there. And maybe an option is that we mow, when we are having a peak of activity of a pest, because we are forcing the natural enemies to go up. Okay? If they are happy here, they were not going there. So we have to open the mind on how we manage this ecosystem. This is not the same ecosystem we have when we have no cover crops. And of course, we need to understand the surrounding area. Okay? Because this is a part of this balance between the different species. Okay, I will go on with some other facts in this review. A lot of experiments, of course, studied the growth of the plants, like 50 something. Okay, here you have if it was increased, slightly increased, very increased, where, when, why. Okay, you have a lot of information there. In summary, we mainly had a decrease in pruning weight that could be like a slight or a more intense, of course, of a question of competition. Depending on the type of the climate, warm climates, mild climates, cold climates, with irrigation, with no irrigation, we have different intensities of this decrease. As the place is warmer, the intensity of the decrease in growth is higher. And if you have no irrigation in those places, you have higher incidence. That's really logical. Okay, but we have a way of controlling vigor that can work well where vigor is a problem. High vigor is a problem that can happen in wet areas, but also in dry areas, because in many Mediterranean areas we have some years rainy springs, and we have high vigor in spring, so it's a good tool to control that. Yield, the same. We had some papers where there was some increase in the yield, okay, but not many papers, probably associated to less incidence of botrytis and other questions, and some decrease of that. Here, I will not go into detail, as I told you, because everything is in the NO1, and you have the different characteristics of the different questions that were observed by different researchers. So, as my friend says, you have to read it. I told you many times, so you have to read it. I hope this information, the information we compile, because we compile not as an academic exercise of compiling all that information, but in the vocation of being practical. So when you have to decide if you are going to till, to use a cover crop, or to use herbicide, you have an additional tool for beneficial. Now everything is like beneficial making algorithms. You have a lot of information to be building an algorithm. So when you have to choose this, you have more new information for this. Of course, it also is a good tool to decide, if you decide a cover, which cover, spontaneous or sown, which options you have. According to our experience, if you are using spontaneous cover crops, it's cheaper, it's better adapted, but you have higher risk of killing the vines, as I did, because sometimes you have very deep roots that are highly competitive, so you need to be very attentive to the behavior of your cover crop. Okay, maybe you can go to a part of the field and then mow there, or the till there, or plow there, because the weed that they are growing there, they are not good, but in other parts of the vineyard, they are growing well, the ones you want, so you respect that and you plow that, so you get a good spontaneous cover crop. And when you sow the cover crop, you have a lot of options, but what you don't have is a lot of experts around. Okay, now, at least in our work area, we are lacking people to learn or to discuss which is the best cover crop, because we are not used to using cover crops in grapevines. In Spain, until 10 or 15 years was nearly nothing, and we don't know a lot of people that can tell you which is the cover crop that you need in terms of the depth of rooting, the phenology of the cover crop, and all those aspects that are really, really key questions for this selection. Okay, so here you have the information. And now the challenge we are dealing, and I'm nearly finishing this, is the how to manage the under the vine area. Okay, we have in mind the three main options, the herbicide or a tillage or some other ways of managing that. And now what we are studying, and this is the question that Javier Abad's thesis is about, what we are studying is the use of cover crops in the undervine. Okay, we have, this is the fifth season with this cover crop. It's in the same place I saw it was my first experience in 2002 on cover crops. And we are using this clover for managing the weeds under the vines, and we are very happy because it's working very well in terms of competition with weeds. Controlling is very cheap and it's very easy to maintain, at least in these conditions, so we are quite happy with this kind of strategy. You also have a paper in NO1 dealing with this. Okay, so the legend is still there. I have one last thing to say. I don't know if you learned anything about cover crops, but I hope you will learn, many of you, at least I did, a question about urban legends in Paris regarding crocodiles. Because in 1984, they found a crocodile in Paris, so it's true, and this poor crocodile died last year. So it's a sad way of finishing my contribution, but this is the reality of the crocodile. Appeared in 1984, died last year. Good life for a crocodile. To finish, I told before, and I'm not usually very fond of doing these things, but I really think it's good to thank Yves because of the work they are doing. All the partners, the academic partners, the private partners, everyone, because this is a really good thing worldwide, and I think it's worth the effort of working to make it stronger. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Gonzaga. You're not only a great researcher, but also a very good entertainer. That reminds me something.
You're about research.
So this reminds me that in the Middle Ages you had monks were copying books to people are able to read books because books were not printed at that time. And today we have modern monks who are compiling 2,500 pages of research in 25 pages in UNO 1 and then in 20 minutes or 25 minutes of a talk. And this is very, very, very useful, and we are happy that UNO 1 and IVES can bring this information to the end users. So time for questions on this very interesting topic. Pierre-Louis?
Thank you, Gonzaga. So, according to your crocodile, do you think that we are missing a case, PhD case study, to do really, to have a lot of section and some answer concerning this cover cross potential?
Nice and difficult question. I think that we need to understand much better what is happening in the interaction between the cover crop, the soil, and the plant roots. Because once we get to the aerial part, I think it's quite easy, and sometimes my view is that we spend a lot of time analyzing the implications of wine quality, for example, okay? And this is really nice, but you know, with the cover crop, you have 20% less of yield, everything happening in the wine will be probably most related to that decrease in yield than to the fact that it was a cover crop, the agent that caused that 20% decrease. So I think that part is easy to understand, of course, research is needed, but I think that we need more research on the three-phase question of the cover crop, soil, and roots to understand what's going on. Trying to avoid making a too metagenomic approach, because now there are a lot of studies that they are studying the metagenome there, and that's, of course, very nice, but we need to add the agronomic and the physiological and everything approach to that. So that's my view. Of course, we need more research, but I think we need more collaboration with other experts that we usually, at least in Spain, we are not used to collaborate with. That there are people knowing on soil microbiology and on cover crops and all that.
Yeah, what I also like in your approach is that we see that for some questions, we have the answer. If you compile the literature, if there are 20 or 25 publications that go in the same direction, we can say this is the truth. And for other points, the literature can be contradictory, and there still needs to be some more work. Or also for some questions, the answer may be, for instance, an increase in specific soils and a decrease in other soils. So those questions are a little bit more complicated. Antonio, you had a question.
My question comes a little bit after the line of Pierre-Louis. In your review, did you find papers that were looking at cover crops on the wider context of ecosystem management? And if you did, what were the trends that you find when managing the cover crop according to the actual ecosystem and not just the culture?
I think that's a gap missing, because there are not many global approaches. And of course, partially I understand that, because when you are a scientist, you need to try to isolate the thing that you are trying to study from other ones, but reality is more complex. But there are not, as far as I remember, there are not many experiments or many a lot of research trying to separate them. When you read the discussion of the papers, yes, you have some ideas on why this can be related to other factors. But a global research or comparing different managing philosophies or something like that is not common. No, I don't find.
And just as a follow up, would you think that using the compilation you have done on those 2,500 pages, there could be space for an analysis to be done in order to bring up from the works that we're looking at specific questions, the actual insights on how the management may contribute, for example, to use cover crops as ecological corridors in order to connect areas of refuge for biodiversity.
Yeah, it's the basis for that is the work that is already done. So then, of course, we need to study that. That is not very well studied, and we are doing now with Julián some work studying diversity, like 5 meters from the corridor and 10 and 15 meters. So we are trying to quantify the impact of the corridor, the real impact. But you need to start working with entomologists, and that's fantastic. But it's a it's a challenge.
Yes, I just add that Maarten van Elden has worked a lot on corridors, crop management, incidence of the landscape, or in the balance between insects, I would say 30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago.
But it stops.
Yes. Yeah. And now
we need to go up, but we miss 50 years.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was terrific in advance compared to what we would work on now.
Yes, you know, Jan-Fried, I tell many times that we have to adapt to climate change or to current conditions. We were running in the opposite direction in terms of diversity and in terms of fertility.
Okay, time for one last question. And once again, there's plenty of time during your lunch break. If you have questions to Gonzaga, he will be happy to answer. But just leave him the time to drink one or two glasses of wine, and his answers will even be better. But there's a last question from Manuela Brando from Chateau Lafite.
Gonzaga, thank you. Thank you very much. Very interesting for us. You talked about how to choose your cover crop and the effects of them. There are many urban legends about that. The time that we have to keep them, do we have to and how we destroy them? Do we have to destroy them to mold them in the beginning of the season before a heat wave or not? We don't have any key to know how to do it.
Well, to choose the cover crop, I think you need to have clear your objective in terms of how much I want to remove vigor from this field. Because if you want to remove a little vigor, you need a low developing cover crop that is just to go with the machinery and to improve something. So this is the first question. What I am asking the cover crop for? If you don't know that, it's useless. You cannot use a cover crop without asking yourself that question. The second question I would ask to myself would be, or I will look, is how deep my soil is and where are the vine roots are. Okay, so because when I kill the vines, the soil was deep, but I obliged the roots to go to a more saline area in the soil because it was surrounded by other crops and was a saline horizon there, and salinity killed the plants. Because the cover crop forced them, the roots, to go down. So that's the way. So you need to know very well the profile, because you have to think where your roots are going to, the vine roots are going to. And then you need to find the depth of the cover crop that will make compatible to reduce the vigor as you want and the soil characteristics. And with that, you just need to know about cover crops. I'm not an expert in the species and everything. I know how to remove. I will pay a lot of attention to spring to avoid the spring frost risk, because this is can be very critical. Maybe you can be quiet for some years, but then you pay, and it's really clear effect. Even with the under the vine cover crops, that we have seen some effect, negative effect of the cover crops. So it's good to keep it as short as possible in that time, and then to destroy them. I think it depends very much on the characteristic of the climate and the soil and the cover crop. In spring now there are some in Lleida some experiments on how to destroy the cover crops. That the system that I don't know the names in English, but they cut but leave them like that, so they cover. So there are some research being done, and, but we have to learn, of course.
Do we have to be afraid of a heat wave, or can we keep our cover crops even if it's hot and dry?
of course, you if you have the chance to remove it when it's when a heat wave is coming, it can be good. But for that, I think it's more useful to play with the phenology of the cover crop, at least in Mediterranean areas. Because if you have a spontaneous cover crop or a sown cover crop that closes the cycle soon, you will have all the advantages and none of the disadvantages, even going to destroy it. So cereals are adapted to that season. So you have no, I have no problem with the grasses in July or August because they are already dry. So you need to think with that. But here, of course, it may be different.
Thank you, Gonzaga. And I think we really need one or two papers for technical reviews from your review because this topic is really interesting for technical reviews. And now I will. No, but we need several. We need several papers. I got the message.